Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas. Plenty of guests joining me throughout today's show as we kick things off in the Premier League. Manchester United against the Wolves. Wolves with their first win at Old Trafford since 1980. Gian Moutinho scoring the only goal of the game 8 minutes before the full-time whistle. Rangnick's first defeat then in charge since taking over at United. And they missed the opportunity to move up the table. They remain seventh, 4 points adrift of Arsenal. Still in fourth. Right then, look at this for a lineup. Crikey, all right, see if I can do this. We've got Stuart Robson. No, Stevie Nicholl,
no.
Stuart Robson, Nana Manua, and Don Hutchinson with us to reflect on what we saw at Old Trafford. Robbo, I suppose the obvious question to start with is where did it go wrong for United?
Well, first of all, they got it all wrong tactically. Wolves were playing with a back three, their usual system, and they got it absolutely right. Manchester United were playing with a back four, and Luke Shaw kept on getting tucked in, marking Trincão, which meant Semedo could make forward runs and get forward at every opportunity. Up front, they played with Ronaldo as the main centre-forward and Cavani as the second centre-forward. And they were asking him to go back and stop Neves playing, and Neves was running the game. The two midfield players were playing too deep. They were all over the place, Manchester United. There was no pattern of play. There was no understanding of what they were trying to do. So tactically, they lost it. And also, Wolves had the better players. They were better individually. A lot was wrong with Manchester United today.
What struck you as the thing that was wrong, Stevie?
Well, I think, you know, when you're coaching, I think the worst thing you can do is to put players on the field and have them not know exactly what the job is. You know, that's half the battle. Because if you can do that, then at least when it goes wrong, you can point a finger and you can sort it out. But I think there's no question that in particular, Mason Greenwood had no idea where he was playing. Every time I turned away and turned my head back to the telly, he was either in the right wing, then the next minute he's in the left wing, then he's in the middle of the park, and then he's trying to get in the box. I mean, he was all over the shop. Sancho was a little bit more disciplined defensively, but Mason Greenwood didn't know where he was supposed to be and did neither attack nor defend. So there you go, straight away. Not only are you a man down in the middle of the park, but you're another man down because United have got at least one, and Mason just had no idea what he was supposed to be doing.
Nadim, is it fair to describe United as a mess?
Maybe they're a mess, but there is potential. But as the guys were saying there were certain things which were just wrong. I think when Stuart talks about the tactical side of things, I think that was wrong. But the thing that alarmed me the most is something which Luke Shaw's mentioned in the post-game interviews. He said there was no intensity from the get-go. There were times gone by when you go to Old Trafford, you're going to feel the noise, you're going to feel them applying maximal pressure. But instead, as soon as the ball was kicked off, they basically went on the back foot and allowed Wolves to get into the game and get a feel for the ball and get in their rhythm. And I think that kind of set the tone for what that first half would be. And in some ways, the way Wolves were in that second half, because they had the confidence. So even though we can talk about tactics and so on and people not maybe understanding where they're supposed to be, the fact of the matter is you're at home. There's 75,000 people have come there to see you dominate an opposition, and he didn't really lay a glove on them the start, and I think that was very, very ominous from the get-go. So, like I say, it is a mess, but there are certain things which they can change. I'm sure as Rangnick looks back, and he's obviously disappointed with the way that they played, I think there's certain things he can address that aren't even tactical, and in some ways, I suppose that's a positive.
Donna, it's so striking, though, from what we've seen already this season with other clubs, Antonio Conte, Steven Gerrard at Villa, there has been a new manager bounce. There's been no bounce. It's just been absolutely flat. There's nothing you've seen, has there, from Rangnick coming in that has lifted or improved this side?
No, it's totally flat. And I think that's obviously a massive disadvantage, because Bruno Lage has done his homework on this 4-2-2-2 system. And it's very narrow. The biggest thing that struck me tonight was, and you would never associate it with Man United players, it was the lack of quality in possession. There were so many times guys in the middle of the park, like McTominay, like Fred, like Sancho, like Greenwood, were giving the ball away under no pressure. And in a world where there's so much analysis and you can easily get, you know, footage of different teams and different systems, I thought it was incredibly naive from Ranić tonight to go in with that 4-2-2-2 narrow against, as Stuart said, a back three. I thought Neves and Moutinho absolutely ran the show, two very cultured players. And as you see by the graphic there, that can look like a 4-4-2, but Sancho and Greenwood were so narrow. Their plan was to try and get Luke Shaw on the ball, who was very quiet, didn't have a good game, and Wan-Bissaka's just completely out of form. So all of a sudden, you're looking at a Man United side with hardly any quality on the ball. That's alarming.
Robert, obviously we've been critical of Solskjaer and Ranić since he's taken over. How much responsibility do the players need to take for their collective performances over recent weeks?
Well, I think Manchester United have got players that don't understand the game particularly well. Sancho, you know, Stevie said that he was disciplined. He didn't understand the game today. He didn't know where he had to be, whether that's the coach's fault or his fault. You have to sort of criticise him for not learning the game. Greenwood, likewise, he's not improving as a player tactically. Rashford, when he came on, looked at completely out of sorts, out of confidence. But I would still say, why, if you're going to play Edinson Cavani up front with Ronaldo, do you get Edinson Cavani to go and mark Neves when Wolves have got the ball? That's why they couldn't press the ball high up the field, because one of the centre forwards was asked to do a midfield job. And you don't ask Cavani, a goal scorer and a box player, to do a midfield player's job. It was totally wrong tactically for me.
Robert brings up a good point. Like, Rashford comes on, Stevie, has the ball and misses the pass by a long way for that counter-attack that United were on. How do you explain the dip in form from these players so collectively?
I think it's got to be the mental side of the game. No question. You know, there's enough quality. There are a couple of players that I don't believe should be playing for a Man United. But there is enough quality that they should be better. And I think it's generally down to do what's going on between their ears. I said earlier that, you know, a lot of them don't understand it, which will show on the field of play. But for somebody like Rashford to come on and look like... He actually looked like a rookie when he came on. It was almost like they were bringing on a kid from the academy. I know he is, but he should now be in pretty much the prime of his career, certainly with the amount of games he's had, with the experience he's had. But he just looked like a rookie, and he looked as though his head was not there. And whether it's not there for reasons outside of football, I don't know. But I would guess, looking by the majority of the United side, most of them don't really know what's going on. And so it all comes out on the field of play. When you're not sure of what you're doing, when your confidence is low, when you're not sure where you should be or where you shouldn't be or what you should be doing, then it'll all show itself on the field. And that's exactly what we're getting every time United go on the field right now.
So, Don, how do you fix this?
Somehow the manager's got to get across to the players, because I don't think the players are having him. I get a feeling that I think they've obviously missed the boat with Conte, who would have had a lot more authority, and he would have stamped his authority on this United side. I'm not sure Ranić's got that in his locker. He's quite calm and quite placid when I hear him speak. I don't know if he's got a different side to him, but he must look at this dressing room now and very quickly identify which players he's going to take on the journey if he's going to be there for 2 years. Whatever manager he brings in, if it's Pochettino in an advisory role, whoever it might be, but very, very quickly, in the 5 games that he's been in charge, I would imagine he'll have an idea now on which players he wants to take forward on the journey and which ones he thinks are not good enough for Man United. And he's going to have to figure that out quick, because apart from 45 minutes against Burnley, and Burnley are struggling, they had no control over the game against Crystal Palace, but I'll give him an out because that was his very first game. Should have got battered against Norwich. They could have scored 4 or 5. Newcastle could have scored 3 or 4 themselves. And then tonight was just a really awful watch. It was like United at the moment are a million miles away from where they should be.
Don loves a journey. Big reality TV fan, need him. Looking at it, though, are there players within that squad that you would want to lead you in this journey?
I think it depends how the manager sees it. If he's going to be sticking with the formation and stuff, then he'll be able to see who he thinks will be able to work within that. But upon listening to people who've seen Ranić work before, they do think that he'll maybe change the plan a little bit if it needs to be changed. So if it's going to be a case that the 4-2-2-2 doesn't work for United with the players that they have, maybe he'll make an adjustment as opposed to just decide to stick with it and then just see, then whoever leaves at the end of the season is someone that can't play in it. But it's the quality players. I think this is the thing with Manchester United right now. The way that I feel about them is that they have enough good players on the field to make you think that they can do something and be successful. But the style of play isn't the thing that gives you the most confidence in that. So they do have half that there. And maybe if it clicks, maybe if there's more time. And I think Ranić himself admits that there's a lot of work to go in. So maybe at the moment, we shouldn't expect the players to fully understand everything. Perhaps in a month or two, even though he's on a six-month deal, basically, they'll really get it and be able to see the best of them. But as it stands, they've had the new change of manager, and it just seems like it's the same old Manchester United, unfortunately.
That's the striking thing, isn't it, Robbo? I understand a new system, but surely players are adaptable enough, aren't they, to get on board with what the manager is trying to bring to the table? And isn't that part of management to be able to explain it in a way that they can get it?
Yeah, and he had to explain it at half-time because he changed the system at half-time.
Yeah.
He put Luke Shaw in as the third centre-back. He put Wan-Bissaka as the right wing-back. He brought Greenwood in to play as an extra midfield player because they've been outplayed in there. And then just when they were getting involved in the game and they were starting to control a little bit of the game, he took Greenwood off and it changed it again. And that, the crowd, that's the big worry for Ranić. The crowd booed the substitution. If the crowd are booing you after four or five games, you've got a big problem as a manager, I'm telling you.
How do you get the players on board here?
Because that
seems to be a big mission, doesn't it?
Yeah, the thing that we've got to realise, you know, players, yes, you have to give players time. If this guy's asking them to do things that they've never heard of before, which I find pretty hard to understand because, you know, the basics of the game and the best basics have been around for hundreds of years, and then you can add stuff on. But the biggest point I'd like to make is that players need something to grab onto. And when you're performing is the wrong word, when you're producing what they are, there's actually nothing that they're doing that's going to encourage them to get better. Because generally when somebody comes in and changes things, there'll be little signs, there'll be little passages, and then the next game there's more passages, and then everybody starts thinking about the way they're doing it, and then everybody comes onto the same page, and then all of a sudden you've got something. But every time you go on the field and there's never anything, because Don's talking about 45 minutes against Burnley, but you could suggest that that was to do with Burnley and not United. So they've got nothing to grab onto. You know, the players are not going home tonight after the game and going, do you know what, there was 20 minutes there where we were this and we were doing that and all this was working and the things the gaffer was saying, he's right, you know. There's nothing of that. And so every time they step on the field, it gets harder and harder and harder. So I'll tell you what, these performances, as far as I'm concerned, they ain't going to be changing anytime soon.
A word on Wolves, I feel, though, Don, just to change things slightly, who were excellent. Were everything that United almost weren't.
Exactly. They had control in the middle of the park. They had two players in Neves and Moutinho who could handle the ball. They had the pace of Semedo. Pedence, I thought, had a really lively game. Jimenez led the line well. He made good substitutions. Traore was a threat. He didn't have his best game when he came on. He gave the ball away a little bit sloppily, but he added that extra pace to go in behind. The three centre-backs were really strong and physical. And the win was due. It was one of them where you're watching the game unfold and for 45 minutes it comes in, it's half-time, it's 0-0, and you go, how Wolves not one or two up, I'll never know. They don't score enough goals, but they got the winner in the second half and they were comfortable. Apart from the Bruno Fernandes hitting the crossbar, that's the only chance I can think of. Wolves actually were really, really comfortable in this game.
It moves Wolves, in fact, just the 3 points of United. We've talked a lot about United being favourites out of the chasing pack to grab that fourth space. Take a look at how things stand after those results today. And they still do remain, according to the bookies, the team that's going to clinch fourth. It's close between them and Arsenal. Spurs, of course, in the running as well, with two games in hand against their North London rivals. Nadim, overall, where do you stand on United's potential then between now and the end of the season?
Do you know what? I think I liked them a bit more before I saw today's performance. And this is to piggyback on something that Stevie just said, because never before have I agreed with a co-pundit at any point in my life. Everything he was saying about if you don't have something to buy into, I was like, yes, Stevie, yes, that's the truth. You preach. Because I've had managers in the past who've come in and they've got their principles. I had a manager once when we were at Queen's Park Rangers. He came in and he said he wants us to go and press people for the whole time. So we went to the Etihad and it was a game where we had to win to stay in the Premier League. So he said, go out there and press them. People said, okay. They lost 6-0, relegated. The next week's the same thing, it's the same thing. If you don't really believe in what you're being told to do, you'll still do it. But it's unlikely to work out too well in the long term. So I think looking at what's happened with United today, maybe changes need to be made, because those odds, you know, they still make them the favourites to finish fourth. But when you look at Chelsea, when you look at Arsenal, when you look at West Ham, sorry, not Chelsea, so when you look at Arsenal, you look at Spurs, you look at West Ham, they look very set in their systems and people believe in it. And whenever they go out and play, they look a confident side and sides that can go out and win any particular game. But at this moment in time, looking at Manchester United, if they're to play well, I don't even know what that looks like. I just know they can win games. But whereas for the others, I think they've got both sides of that.
United top four, Don?
Oh, I've been trying to back them, Dan. And I was looking at that starting 11 tonight and I was trying to think how many of the starting 11 would get in, including Arsenal, in the top four. And I couldn't think of any. And I'm backtracking now because I've seen the performance against Norwich. I've seen the performance against Newcastle, Crystal Palace, and the one tonight. And I find it hard because Spurs under Antonio Conte, unbeaten. Arsenal have come a long way. That not the result, but the performance against Man City told me that Arsenal are close to being back, because they should have beat Man City. They were certainly worth something out of the game, and their attitude's completely different. So they're on a great run. West Ham have just gone two wins back-to-back as well. So United at the moment don't seem to be the form guide, even though they've only lost one under Ranić. The performances haven't been great. So out the four sides going for that one spot, I think it's going to be a struggle for them.
Do you agree, Robbo?
Absolutely. Don mentioned the other three sides that seem to be on the up at the moment. Tottenham with Antonio Conte are still only 75% doing what Antonio Conte wants. They will get better and better. Arsenal are now playing at high intensity. They're playing some great football on the counter-attack. They're dominating games at times. And as he said, West Ham are coming back into it. The one side that don't seem to be improving are Manchester United at the moment.
Meanwhile, Chelsea and Liverpool with a big battle also to catch Manchester City at the top of the table after they, of course, shared the spoils at Stamford Bridge yesterday, finishing 2-2 between the sides currently sitting second and third, meaning that Chelsea currently sitting 10 points adrift as City at the top of the table. Lots of talking points from this game, of course. One of the big ones, Romelu Lukaku, not included in the squad for this big clash of Chelsea on yesterday's show. Craig and Frank felt this was the wrong decision from Thomas Tuchel.
I don't get trying to make a point when you're in a title race still and you need to win.
He has to play. He's the best striker.
I want to win the game. I want to put some pressure on Man City.
It's a mistake, and it's the first one from Tuchel, and I'm very, very disappointed.
The Guardian reporting today, Romelu Lukaku is officially off the naughty step. He will be available for the Carabao Cup semi-final tie against Spurs on Wednesday. Apparently, there's a meeting between Tuchel and the Belgium international. Just taking it back to that debate, Nadim, I'm intrigued. Do you feel that Tuchel made the right decision?
So I think that Tuchel made the right decision, but for the guys yesterday, I don't think they're wrong. I just think that the way that they spoke about it was something which is true for their time, whereas in this one, I think it's different. I think when you look at the stuff that's come out, and Tuchel says that he made that decision and he spoke to the senior players and the senior players agreed with it, I think it's created a situation whereby, as you can see, at the highest level, it's about the collective. The moment you create a double standard within a football club, especially of that type of stature, you lose the respect of basically the whole dressing room. Like, times are different now. That's why I would say they're different. So I wouldn't necessarily say those guys were wrong, but I've seen it firsthand. As soon as somebody can do something that's very different and everyone else has to follow a different set of rules, as I say, it's in a completely different situation. They felt that was the right punishment. The players agreed with it. The manager agreed with it. The board, in terms of making that decision, And Romelu's probably regretting the decision as well. But it looks like Lukaku's going to be back in the squad because he's spoken with Tuchel. So that's what it was. Whether the game was Liverpool, Leicester, Norwich City away from home, like who cares? For me, it's about principle. And as a consequence, you know what Chelsea stand for because this is how they treat anybody. It's not the fact it was Lukaku. It's the fact of everything that happened with that particular person. So for me, I think it was the right decision. And there's something that they're going to stand by and it'll probably get them quite far in the long term because people know where they stand now.
Stevie?
Absolutely not playing. I mean, do you think Alex Ferguson would have played him if he was the manager or if this was Man United? Not a chance. Dalglish, any of these guys, none of them would have played him. Absolutely, Thomas Tuchel did the right thing.
The point that the boys were making yesterday, Stevie, was the fact that this was a game that they had to win. And the fact of the matter is that if you spoke to the senior players, they would want Lukaku in this starting 11 because they knew that the chances were better of them taking 3 points off Liverpool with him in the side as opposed to...
Oh, is that right? Oh, you think that's 100%? So because Lukaku plays, then Chelsea win the game. Let me tell you, there's one thing
Do they have a better chance with Lukaku in the starting 11?
Well, if you let me answer, I'll tell you. No.
Go on.
No, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why it wasn't the best thing to do to play him. Have you ever thought, Jules said it yesterday on the show, half of the stadium was against Lukaku and half of the stadium was for Lukaku. Now, if Lukaku starts the game badly and the crowd gets on him, now you've got Lukaku, whatever, then it starts affecting the rest of the team. Then the whole crowd's against them. The fact was the stadium was on fire. Everybody was behind every single Chelsea player. All the Chelsea players were fired up. They wanted to prove a point as well. The fact that they've got involved and said they didn't think it was right either. Every way you want to look at it is correct. And the little argument of, well, you need to win the game. So you just blow every sort of disciplinary action or anything that goes on at a football club, and Nadim said it. As soon as you know, there was another thing Frank said, by the way. Frank was talking about, you've got to play him. It's not a schoolboy. Well, it's completely the other way. It's not schoolboy, it's professional. And there has to be discipline amongst professionals. And he was 100% right. Thomas Tuchel was 100% right. And for everything you can throw, and the only one that stands up is, well, you need to win the game. That is the one thing that you would consider. There's about 100 other ones that say this is why he's not playing. And they picked the right one. And Tuchel was absolutely 100% correct.
Robbo?
Well, let's get it straight. It looks to me as though Tuchel doesn't really fancy Lukaku at all. Because I saw him for 2 years at Inter where he was absolutely magnificent. And he probably touched the ball 60 times in a game because everything was played through him. He was good with his back to goal. At the start of the season, he played up front by himself and he probably had 10, 11 touches. They were just seeing him as a goal scorer. He's not just a goal scorer. He proved that Inter. So I think Thomas Tuchel doesn't fancy him. Lukaku knows that. That's why he's gone to the press and say, I want out at some point. He's wrong to do that. Tuchel's right to leave him out the side. But overall, Tuchel doesn't fancy him and he's going to be out of Chelsea come the end of the season, probably.
Don, if Tuchel came to you as a senior Chelsea player and asked you what he should do, whether or not Lukaku should play in this big game against Liverpool, what would your response be?
I would be exactly like Stevie. I think for the greater good of the team and the greater good of the dressing room, he couldn't play. And who's to say Chelsea would have got that result if he was in the start of 11, because I thought Chelsea were outstanding. I listened to an interview today, and it was an old one by Jose Mourinho, and he was talking about Lukaku, and he was talking about the individual and his character, and he said Lukaku needs to be the type of guy that needs an arm around his shoulder, and he needs 100% love and affection, and he needs to be told that he's the man. And if he gets all of that, he will be the man, because he's a phenomenal player. I'm not so sure Thomas Tuchel's that type of manager. I think Thomas Tuchel's a little bit, if you don't toe the line, there's discipline here, which is the right way to go. You're going to be treated the same as everyone else. If you step out of line, you're going to be punished and you're going to be disciplined. That has to be the way to go. And it might have been a smart move from Thomas Tuchel anyway, because he might have believed the form that Chelsea are in, they weren't really title contenders. Their form's been average at best over the last 5 or 6 games. So it was a great, I wouldn't say a card to use, but as Stevie said, the atmosphere inside the stadium was absolutely behind Thomas Tuchel, every single Chelsea player. It might have been divisive if he played in that game. And the result that Chelsea got, it might just show that Lukaku's not the man, even though he's a brilliant player and he will be welcomed back in and hopefully he gets his confidence back. But in that one game against Liverpool, I thought Thomas Tuchel was correct.
Well, as I mentioned then, he will be available for Chelsea's clash against Spurs on Wednesday in the first leg of the semi-final of the Carabao Cup. It's a game you can see live here on ESPN+. Followed 24 hours later, what a game it should be, between Arsenal and Liverpool as well, also on Plus.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
A 1-0 victory over Cadiz was enough to see Sevilla close the gap on Real Madrid at the top of the table to 5 points. Not forgetting as well, Lopetegui's side have a game in hand. Robbo, of course, you've been covering La Liga closely. Do we have a title race on our hands?
We do, I think, because Sevilla, although they play some great football and I think they know exactly what they're trying to do, they still struggle in front of goal, and it took them a long time to get going tonight in terms of creating goal-scoring opportunities. We saw Real Madrid not play particularly well and lose the game the other day. So I think we've got a good title race on. Real Madrid, of course, are favourites. They've got a good manager who knows how to win games. They've got some excellent players. But I just think this is going to be quite tight come the end of it. Sevilla and the Lopetegui are a decent side. They just need to create more in the top third of the field.
Yeah, it's just getting that consistency going, isn't it, Gab Marcotti? To put real pressure on Carlo Ancelotti's side.
And it would be quite a story if they managed to do it. Obviously, you know, you've got the head-to-head, you've got the game in hand. But equally, I think, I disagree a bit with Robbo. I didn't think Real Madrid were necessarily poor at the weekend. But I think the key thing for Sevilla is just to keep players fit and fresh. They look absolutely exhausted heading into the Christmas period. I think it's kind of perhaps carried over a little bit. They're going to look to try to get some help, I think, in the January transfer market. Monchi is on it, and I think they're going to give it a go. But certainly in terms of depth and options and quality, Real Madrid are ahead.
Meanwhile, in Catalonia, we saw Ferran Torres officially presented as a Barcelona player after making that 55 million euro move from Manchester City. Gab is laughing. We'll explain why he's laughing, I suppose, with what we're about to hear with these quotes. First off, Joan Laporta, the Barcelona president, was asked about Barca's signing Erling Haaland. He said, "Everybody in the world should get ready as we are back." Okay. Also at the presentation was Barca's director of football, who spoke about the issues around registering Ferran Torres. "We signed him when we knew we didn't have the salary limit. We're convinced we will be able to register him before Sunday. We will decide with Xavi on any more signings, but there will need to be exits first. With Ferran, we made an exception before sorting the financial fair play out." Oh, yes, Gab. Barcelona are back.
I mean, back to what? I don't understand any of this. I don't understand the purpose of announcing it before the window even opened, and then you do a whole presentation. Look, he's a Barcelona player. All it means is you got to start paying the guy. Until you can register him, it's not going to mean anything. Now, Matteo Alemany seems to be a little bit more grounded in reality than Laporta, judging from his quotes. He says that they hope to do it by Sunday. I would hope that they have a pretty confident plan of how they're going to do it, because otherwise, you know, it's one of those situations where Ferran Torres comes over and says, "Oh, look, they can't register me. I'll just hang out in Barcelona and get paid and not be able to play for the rest of the season until next year." I don't quite follow any of this, frankly.
And according to reports, he's going to have a new chum to hang out with, Gab, because Alvaro Morata heavily linked to a move to Barcelona as well this January.
Yeah, this though, to be fair, I think this report came from the Madrid press, not the Barcelona press. So maybe they're being a bit mischievous, but they came out with a story. Obviously, Morata is on loan at Juventus from Atletico Madrid. And now all of a sudden, turns out Xavi really likes Morata and, you know, seeing is there a way to get him to Spain. The tricky thing here, again, you're talking wages. Sure, it's a loan, but you still need to go and negotiate. It's not like Juventus loaned him for free from Atletico Madrid. So then you get into this complicated thing with the Griezmann money and the money they're going to get from Atleti for Griezmann. But of course, again, remember, that money was spent to try to help plug the enormous hole in their finances as well, right? It wasn't meant to be used for Morata necessarily. You have the fact that Morata makes about 3.5 times as much as Luke de Jong, who I'm assuming they're going to try to ship out. Otherwise, their wage bill increases. On top of all that, Juventus and Max Allegri extremely annoyed. They believe that Barcelona went and spoke directly to Morata without giving them the courtesy of a phone call or warning. They've already been linked with Mauro Icardi. I don't think that's going to happen. They may have a go at Scamacca if Morata leaves. Morata hasn't been pulling up trees, but Morata need him because, you know, at the start of the season, they had Morata and a guy named Cristiano Ronaldo. Now Ronaldo's gone. If they lose Morata as well, then they're left with Moise Kean, Paulo Dybala, and not much else.
Meanwhile, Gab talking nonsense when he said Real Madrid weren't that good against Getafe. They were terrible as they lost their first match since September. Eden Hazard not starting in that game. He came on in the second half. Ancelotti said, I prefer to start with Asensio and Rodrigo. I knew that they could not do 90 minutes because they have had COVID. I had Hazard for the second half and he's been brilliant. He has tried to create with Marcelo down the left. He must have been watching Hazard with your commentary on FIFA, Robbo, because the Hazard that we have seen has not been the one that has been quote-unquote brilliant.
No, he hasn't been brilliant. I mean, I think people have criticised him a bit too readily. You can see he's tried to do the right things. He's tried to link up with people. He's tried to make the right sort of runs, but he's lost that yard of pace. So he doesn't go past anybody particularly easily. So he's having to play 1-2s. He's having to play in front of people. He hasn't got that bit of pace to run beyond people. And that's what made him a great player for Chelsea and for Belgium when he got himself turned, went 1v1 against people and went past them. He hasn't done that in the games he's played for Real Madrid ever since he's been there, really. And you have to say that it was the injury that started it, but he hasn't got that fitness back and he's lost the confidence and he's lost that bit of pace. So he's certainly not been brilliant.
Ancelotti just playing the game though, Robbo, I suppose, just saying what needs to be said.
Yeah, absolutely. He's trying to build his confidence up and absolutely right. He's an expensive player. They're not going to be able to get rid of him at the moment. So he's got to build him up. He's got to keep working with him. Hopefully he can get his form back and he'll be a top class player again. It seems unlikely at the moment, but I hope he does get his form back.
Robbo's hope's not going to help things though, is it, Gab?
It's going to take more than that. Again, you're going to accuse me of being a little too tight with Ancelotti when I say I think there were some sparks from Eden Hazard, especially off the ball. But I think it is important he got on the pitch. There were some suggestions he would actually start this game. Instead, Ancelotti eased him in there because, as I mentioned before, when I said they weren't that bad, they gave up a goal on an individual mistake after, what, like 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And then they spent the rest of the game against when Getafe parked 3 buses in front of the goal trying to break through. I mean, there was no Vinicius. Obviously, they needed Hazard's trickery down the left in the second half. It didn't work out. But Ancelotti thinks he can give you something different, but he doesn't really have a choice. Hazard, with those wages, isn't going anywhere. What they don't want is for Hazard to turn into Bale 2.0. That would be pretty much disastrous. So you do everything you can to keep him in the fold.
Copa del Rey then dominates midweek here on ESPN Plus, taking through some of the standout sides that will be taking place in the round of 32. It all starts on Tuesday, Espanyol away against Ponferradina. And then on Wednesday, Valencia and Real Sociedad in action. Barca, meanwhile, taking on Linares Deportivo. Real Madrid against Alcoyano. Those games all available on ESPN Plus. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. It was one of the most entertaining first halves of the season, wasn't it? Chelsea against Liverpool at Stamford Bridge. I think we'll give it a little more time as we welcome back Nadim Don Robbo and Stevie with us. Should we talk about the Mane red card, boys? Obviously, we discussed that quite a lot on yesterday's show. Stevie, where did you stand on it? Obviously, just 10 seconds after the kickoff in the first half.
A red card.
Sorry, Stephen,
we
just seen a break up there slightly.
It's a red card. I mean, listen, I heard you yesterday, and you started it, Dan, giving it. Well, it wasn't like he didn't get the didn't sharpen his elbow and then shove it in his face. It was just his forearm. I mean, seriously, is that an excuse for not giving somebody a red? It was only the forearm that connected with the opposition's cheekbone. I'm sorry, when I saw it. When I saw it the first time, I was hoping it was just clumsy. But when I saw the replay, I'm like, how do you get out of this? So I was surprised it wasn't a red.
Frank and Craig didn't believe it was a red card before Stevie starts banging on about my comments. Nadim?
I think, for me, I've seen more yellow cards given for an elbow or a hand in the face of somebody as they're going up for a header. And as I look back at the, saw it first time, thought, oh, that's probably a red. But he does catch him. But I kept thinking, is Mane looking at him? And I don't think throughout the clip I ever saw Mane looking at him. So there's an argument from my side that the arms are up there because he's actually thinking about jumping for the header. And as soon as he's made contact, he's absolutely freaked out and thought he's in trouble here, which is why he starts putting his hand on his head and thinking, oh no, what have I done? So with that being said, as I say, I've seen more yellow cards for that type of collision than I've seen reds. But as you can see, as soon as he hits, he's like, oh no, what have I done? I've panicked, I've made a big mistake. But yeah, I'm not happy it was a yellow, but I think I'd have been more unhappy if it was a red.
What are you chuckling at, Stevie?
So what's that? Is that a yes or a no?
That's an orange.
Hey, I'll tell you what, don't look at us and tell us.
Yeah,
I wasn't
fine.
Looking at him when I punched him straight in the face.
Yeah, it was fine, yeah.
So it doesn't count.
Robbo?
Well, I'm afraid it's a red card.
Because he wasn't trying to lift his arms to jump. He just put his arms straight, or his elbow straight into the face of Azpilicueta. So there was nothing else he was trying to do otherwise than hurt Azpilicueta. So it's a red card, has to be.
Don?
Yeah, I'll echo everything Thomas Tuchel said after the game. And Thomas Tuchel said, I always want 11v11. His favourite player in the Premier League is Sadio Mane. But it's a red card.
OK. Overall, Stevie, what did you make of Liverpool's performance, particularly when they were 2-0 up?
Listen, Liverpool pretty much... Chelsea were the better side. I mean, there's no getting away from the fact that if it was a football competition, then Chelsea would have won on points because they played by far the better football. Liverpool have on the break got some real diamonds in Salah and Mane. I mean, you talk about an absolute nightmare. Try to keep a hold of them with not just the pace but the skill. I mean, that's what Liverpool was. They were counter attacking. No surprise, the second half. Both sides ran out a little bit of a juice, but Liverpool just played counter-attacking football. They couldn't keep the ball. I mean, they were trying to do everything at 100 miles an hour, as were Chelsea, which made it such a great game. But no, Liverpool were average. They weren't particularly great. The thing is, you think about it, you score two goals away from home and the opposition goalie's made two other brilliant saves. but you didn't really play particularly well as a football team. It just tells you that they're really dangerous on the counter-attack. That's what this game told you yesterday. And no surprise, really, was it?
Who finishes higher, Stevie?
I think Liverpool will finish higher. They'll definitely finish higher. Because they'll score more goals. They'll score more goals. Lukaku will come back and he'll score some goals, but they won't score as many as Liverpool.
You agree, Don?
I do, even when you look at the next round of games. I mean, Man City play Chelsea, so you'd imagine Chelsea are potentially going to drop points and Liverpool play Brentford and with the game in hand. So I would lean towards Liverpool being favourites for second, for sure.
We'll let Stevie go. Nadim, Don and Robbo will be hanging around to answer your questions on Extra Time. As always, you can check that out over on our YouTube channel. We reported on this yesterday, didn't we? Ricardo Pepi is officially now an Augsburg player. What a move for the US international, the youngster coming in and looking to save their season. A lot of excitement, of course, around this player. Just a reminder, of course, Augsburg currently sitting just one above the relegation zone in Germany. He'll be available for their match against Hoffenheim, which is live on ESPN Plus on Saturday at 9:30 Eastern. Meanwhile, big news coming out of MLS today. Of course, we know that Bob Bradley had left LAFC. And he's to be replaced by our former colleague, Steve Cherundolo, has made the move then, of course, was in charge of Las Vegas Lights last year, has now come in to be the head coach at LAFC. And for a lot more reaction to that hire and Ricardo Pepi joining Augsburg, be sure to check out the latest edition of Football Americas, which is available now. Lots of them to talk about on ESPN+.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That is it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much for being with us. Be sure to stay tuned, though. As promised, Extra Time is next. Nadim, Robbo and Don answering your questions. Hello there, welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Stuart Robson, Don Hutchinson and Nadim Anua with us. Is Cristiano Ronaldo's transfer a massive mistake by Manchester United, Robbo?
I thought he was a bit of a problem at Juventus. Although he scored a lot of goals, it meant they couldn't have a disciplined team shape. Quite often he went where he wanted to go. And that's been a little bit of the case at Manchester United. And I think it's going to be difficult for Ranić to get a position for him and to get a style of play for him, because he does what he wants. So everybody else has to work around him. And I'm not sure that's what Ranić wants at Manchester United. So it's not been a success so far, apart from in the Champions League.
What are all your many sources saying, Don?
Not many sources saying anything at the moment, Dan. Everything's gone a little bit quiet. I would have thought that money would have been better off spent signing someone like Declan Rice or Jude Bellingham. I think those are the guys that would improve Man United's midfield. I don't think it's a mistake signing Ronaldo, because without him, they wouldn't even be in the last 16 in the Champions League.
Declan Rice would be a lot more money, though, wouldn't he, Don?
Well, he would, but you're going to get Declan Rice for what? 8 years? 10 years? What are you going to get out of Ronaldo? You're going to get one season? Is his leg still going to be there next season? Is the new manager, whoever it might be, because that's a strange situation, is because Ralf Rangnick at the moment is having an absolute nightmare. Is he going to then sack himself in the summer and then give the job to Pochettino? It's just a mess, but he can still do a job, Ronaldo. But I just think when you look at that engine room, people like Bellingham and Declan Rice, they're going to be the future superstars.
But Nathan, out of all the problems that United have, is Ronaldo really at the top of the tree?
No, for me he's not. For me he's not. I think when one of the greatest goal scorers to ever play the game becomes available and he chooses you, I think you kind of have to take it. But I think one thing which we can see at this moment is that I don't think it's the biggest problem, but for Manchester United he doesn't appear to be the solution. So that's a very, very tricky situation to be in.
Will Ronaldo be playing the Champions League, Europa League or Conference League next season? Don?
Ooh, I'm going to lean now as it stands towards Europa League. They've got it all on now, Man United. I think out of all the sides that's got momentum, even though the form guy's pretty good, their performances of late have been nowhere near the top four side, the Champions League spot. So I'm going Europa League.
Robbo, which powerhouse is more likely to miss out on the top four, United or Barcelona?
I would say that's a difficult one because Barcelona have had all the injury problems, COVID problems. When are they all going to come back? They got a good win at the weekend. Manchester United not doing particularly well. I'm going to say Manchester United at the moment, and Barcelona are going to have a good run. Xavi's going to get his system right. Those players are going to come back fit. They got a lot of spirit from the win at the weekend. So Manchester United are going to struggle to get into the top four.
You got no new flowers behind you, Robbo. You have to go and get some for yourself.
No, I got rid of those. They're dead. Gone. Once every 6 months. That's the only time I buy them.
Hey, that's all right. Nadim and his decoration for Christmas was quickly taken down. He's just got grey curtains and a white background. That is it. Don, what's the percentage chance Rangnick sticks with a 4-2-2-2-2-2-2 until the end of the season?
4-2-2-2-2-2-2, he can't. I mean, surely he can't. So the percentage chance of that is absolutely zilch. He can't stick with this system. No way.
Nadim, how would you fare in this system?
Well, I'd be playing in the back four, so I guess I'd be fine. So I think I've got no issues with that.
That's not necessarily the case
in
the past.
As far as Rangnick goes, But yeah, with the twos and all that stuff, I think for Rangnick, if it's not working, I think he'll change it. Because the fact of the matter is, for Manchester United this year, it feels clear that they have to finish in the top four. So if they're falling behind, something has to give. So it's easy as that.
How would you be in a 4-2-2-2, Robbo?
I'd have been okay as one of the central midfield players. They don't have to do too much running around. They can just sit in that midfield area and get on the ball and make things happen, do the defensive side of the game. What I'd like to have seen from Manchester United is two holding midfield players in the latest game against Wolves, just to play higher up the field and press the ball higher up the field. But they didn't do that, so Wolves dominated the game.
For all of you, have you ever been in a team where even the players could admit the problem is not the gaffer, but the players?
Who are you asking?
That's for all of you, yes. So anyone who would like to chip in, or we could just sit in silence for a little while, awkwardly.
Yes, I'll go first. Yeah, it's happened a few times. So I've been relegated twice with Queen's Park Rangers. Both times we were a disaster. But then there was one time in the Championship in particular. We were about mid-table and we were okay. But it was when Newcastle were in the Championship as well. And they were beating us like 4-5-0. And the way they were playing, I just looked at it and I said, they're just, as a collective, they're just better than just we are. So it was a very, like, couldn't blame the manager, couldn't blame the tactics. I just thought, yeah, that's Newcastle United in the Championship. Unfortunately.
Because the players were better, that was it.
I'd go when I was at Arsenal early days. We had some very good players, half the England side, Scottish internationals, you name it. We had Vladimir Petrić come from Yugoslavia, the best player in Yugoslavia. But we weren't particularly good. We came sixth or seventh. And there was a reason why, because there was cliques amongst the players. Some players didn't like other players. Other players moaned about other players in the team. It wasn't a nice atmosphere. It wasn't the manager's fault. It wasn't the coach's fault. It was us as a group of players that were at fault.
What clique were you in, Robbo? Were you on your own in your single child way?
I was an only child, so I just kept myself to myself. That's it.
That's it.
Everybody had roommates, but I just slept by myself. That was all right.
I bet, Robbo, I bet you were down the bottom of the bus, man. I bet you were right at the bottom.
Are you saying at the back of the coach or right by the manager?
Right by the manager, down the bottom of the coach.
Yeah, when it was Siri Neil and Don Howe was right by the manager. Don't worry about that.
No, was that clear? Obviously at school you never wanted to be anywhere near the front. Everyone had to be at the back. Is that the similar, like in the bus when you were playing, Don?
You always want to be at the back, always.
See, Don was a rebel. You know, if you ever look at, you know, the way he acts on the show, he's a rebel. He's aggressive. You know,
his Ferrari,
he wants to have a go at everybody.
Ways.
Negative, He wants to be at the back of the coach.
That's it. Nathan, where did
some
you sit?
Some might say a maverick.
Not many.
When I was captain, I was at the back of the bus, all the freedom, I decided who sat back there with me. And then when I was on my way out of Man City, I was sitting across from the manager. Probably the most awkward times ever seen to man. So yeah, there we go.
Oh man, that's gotta be awkward. It's horrible. Oh, who'd want to be there? Robbo, is Pep's Man City better than Sir Alex's United at its peak?
I would say yes, because they play a style of football that not many people have been able to play over the years. And I would say they're as good as the Liverpool side of the late 70s, early 80s, which were magnificent. Pep Guardiola is getting Manchester City to play a magnificent style of football. So not only are they winning, but they're winning well. And it's great to see. So yes, I would say they're the best team I've seen.
But they haven't won the Champions League, Robbo.
In England, I said.
But they haven't won the Champions League.
No, they haven't, but I still would say that Pep Guardiola as a coach and that Manchester City team are the best I've seen in England.
Nadim, as a Manchester City fan and past player, how much have you enjoyed the slow and miserable downfall of United since Sir Alex Ferguson left? When do you think they'll return to that standard, if at all?
Oh my gosh, I'm going to have to put this on record now, aren't I? Every time I see Manchester United struggling, I'll be honest, the two sides of me, there's the pundit side that tries to take it in and just have a reasoned opinion. Then there's another side of me that tunes in to see the car crash. So that's who I am as a person. And those years when Alex Ferguson was in charge were the toughest years of my life. So myself, like many other people out there, not just associated with Manchester City, will never shed a tear when Manchester United struggle. And hopefully will continue for the rest of my life. But if not, just a couple more years at least.
Final question. Nadim, did you ever play as yourself on FIFA? Was your rating too high or too low?
And do you know what? I never played as myself on FIFA, but people told me that they'd get me on FIFA because I was so fast. But what I did do was when I was playing Championship Manager, that game back in the day, I would always select myself and put myself in the team. And that's when I knew I really made it. It wasn't playing in real life on a Saturday. It was playing on a video game from Monday through Friday. So yeah, I did all of that and I was the greatest to ever do it.
Championship Manager, you could waste days on that. Football Manager. Now, Robbo, what sort of feedback have you had from people with your FIFA commentary? I haven't seen very nice comments about you on Twitter.
Oh, well, you always listen to Twitter. Don't ever listen to Twitter, Dan. Well, I'm employed again to do it next year and maybe the year after. So there we are. That's all that matters, Dan. That's all that matters.
Is it easier now because it's all on fire? They can just chuck in the name so you don't have to, you're not starting from scratch.
I don't have to do so many days, that's for sure. But there's all new versions. You have to do a whole load of more scripts. Yeah, there's going to be a few days of hard work.
How many hours do you reckon it took you?
Well, I know exactly how many hours of doing the commentary, which was 41 times 5. So what's that? That's quite a lot.
Wow, that's 205?
Yeah, and probably the same amount doing the writing of the scripts.
Wow, 410 hours?
Probably, yeah.
Wow, but you got paid by the hour, Robbo, so you're loving life.
Of course, yes, you know.
Very
bit like this show, Dan. Just keep going, bit like this show.
Right. Yeah, just like this show. Don, were you a video gamer at all?
I was, but I was more sort of Call of Duty and shoot 'em ups, that type of... I never got.
Aggressive. There's that aggression again.
Yeah,
that
aggressive,
maverick.
There it is.
Aggressive,
maverick. I never got how you'd want to play football games. I never understood it. Like, why wouldn't you just want to get a ball and go in the garden or go against the garage or...
It's no wonder he got sent off so many. It's no wonder you got sent off so many times, Don. It's all that aggression.
And I hardly played them, Stu. I hardly played them, but if I did,
not the football game, the Tour of Duty,
I just couldn't get why you want to play football games.
Why do you want to play football games? Why?
I don't. I'm talking about you and Call of Duty. That's where you get all your aggression from. You know that. You need you to calm down and not have a go at the referee and things like that.
That was me just breaking away from my team, being a maverick again.
Maverick. But you never played any sports games, Don?
No, not really. I mean, what was the one back in the day? The athlete one where you'd done... What was that one? The Atari one back in the day where...
Oh, Daley Thompson's decathlon.
That sort of thing. That sort of thing.
Wow,
old 40.
School.
I just could never get... My mind could just never get why you'd want to try and play a football game where the effects are not real, where you can actually go and do the real thing. It just... My mind just
couldn't
get tuned into that.
You should hear the commentary these days. It's awful, awful, Don.
Hey, Don, just play it to listen to the commentary. It will exactly. Send you to sleep. It will calm you down. You'll love it.
All right, that is it. Thank you very much, guys. Speaking of sending you to sleep, we'll be back tomorrow for more of this. What's happening tomorrow? There's something happening in there. Oh, Mark Clattenburg's here to take us through some of the big talking points from the weekend.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.